You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Well, today I spoke to Don Carson from the Forest Owners Association. Now, just for a bit of backstory, I did an interview last month with a representative from 50 Shades of Green. And they're a group of farmers who are concerned about the Billion Trees program, encouraging investors to buy up prime farmland in order to plant trees and reap the carbon credits. The main takeaway from that initial interview was that 50 Shades of Green wants those billion trees to be native. However, Don Carson heard this earlier interview and got in contact with us to comment on the feasibility of these trees all being native, as well as to defend pine and forestry as the solution to sequester our carbon in the short term and a way of supplying jobs for farmers who will be faced with changing their lifestyle. He began by telling me why he doesn't agree with the claims of the 50 Shades of Green campaign.
Well, the 50 Shades of Green campaign is something that I can well understand. I've spent a lot of time on sheep and beef property, and I can understand some of the concerns that they would have that a particular way of life that has been very important and also iconic for New Zealand in some areas will be diminished. Now, the arguments that are being used, however, are of a different nature. They say that there's less work if you have pine trees than sheep and beef, that properties that run sheep and beef produce more returns than mere trees, and that the government should step in and control this, because if sheep and beef properties don't continue to produce food for the world, then somehow the world, or at least New Zealand, will go short on food. Now, all of those arguments really are quite wrong. The numbers that we can show off is that a return from forest, the same area of farmland, will produce much less. Likewise, there are more jobs in forests than there are on sheep and beef farms, and that while the world certainly has an increase in population and those people need to be fed, and countries like New Zealand will continue to export food, nobody's going to suggest that trees will take over everything. It's just that for climate change needs, New Zealand either goes completely cold turkey on fossil fuels or starts to reduce its fossil fuel use much more rapidly than it's doing at the moment and relies on trees, and pine trees are really the only ones that fit the bill, except eucalypts. Native trees, unfortunately, as much as you would like them to be able to sequester carbon as fast as pine trees, they don't, and they can't, and they're a long way behind, unless you're waiting a couple of hundred or even more years, and then it might get a bit more even. But for a number of reasons, for the best use of some of our landscape, for the fight against climate change, and for getting income and providing jobs, forestry is a much better proposition in much of New Zealand, not all of it, in much of New Zealand, than continuing to run marginal sheep and beef farming.
Well, what I took away from 50 Shades of Green is that they were also concerned about pine being planted on flat land where it could possibly be planted otherwise in less accessible land, which is not as good for farming.
Now, we're talking about flat ear, not flat. We're not talking about the premium land at all. There are much better uses for nice, good agriculture land that you would run with horticulture, but not some of that hill country. That hill country has for many, many years been very marginal for farming, and a more productive use of it would be in trees. Now, the reason why farmers have resisted it, other than emotional reasons, simply the economics. You have to wait a long time, comparatively about 28 years, before you harvest your trees and get your return. And so you've got to live off something in the meantime. And that has always been the struggle. What do you do for income while the trees are growing?
On this criticism of pine trees, that is one of the major concerns, is that they do have this shorter lifespan.
Now, while you cut down a tree in a pine plantation, you replant it, you grow another one. And so the average of the carbon sequestration of that forest is based on a tree that is about 20 years old. Some are younger, some are older. But the forest goes on, if you want to, indefinitely. Now, I know that some of the more iconic indigenous trees, the portacarps or the kodi, they last for a long time, a single tree. But I'm talking here in terms of forests. So if you differentiate those, the pine tree, yes, is short-lived in comparison. And if you say, well, you should only have something that is going to last a long time, then why are we farming lambs?
In terms of, however, though, when you then cut those trees down, does that not undo all the good work that it's done in absorbing that carbon?
Yes, when a forest is harvested, it loses some carbon. How much depends on what you do with the wood. I think it's important to realise that some numbers, if you put them together, compare pine trees favourably with indigenous trees, because even if you're harvesting those trees, that forest there per hectare will lock up permanently and indefinitely 600 tonnes of carbon dioxide per hectare. So that just keeps humming along forever. And then an indigenous tree, the best of the podocarps that's sequestering carbon, can only do half of that after about 40 years. Over time, the indigenous trees will outperform pine trees. But that, I think, is time that we don't have. The real authorities on climate change say that we have at most a couple of decades to do something really substantial about reducing our greenhouse gas emission. And if we are relying on indigenous trees to lock up our carbon, that's a time scale of about 10 times that.
And this is obviously given the urgency of the situation.
We don't have the time to muck around. More trees need to be planted. As you produce more greenhouse gases, you can't just say, well, it's all locked up in the forest, because there are more emissions that in turn need locking up. And that's, I think, some of the concern of 50 Shades of Green has, that they see the projections of a lot of the sheep and beef country being gobbled up by pine trees. Now, in some areas, that in fact is going to be the case. There might be 2.8 million hectares required to get to carbon zero by 2050. Seems a long way off, but you need to get the trees in now for them to count at 2050. No point in planting them all in 2049.
I understand there are criticisms of the idea of carbon trading and its effectiveness.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's another thing that we get the finger pointed at us from 50 Shades of Green, is that it's a whole bunch of foreigners coming in here, incentivised to plant trees out that they will never harvest. Well, it's wrong on two points. First of all, there have been only two entities which have received approval from the Overseas Investment Office. Two entities, three properties, a total of 2,500 hectares, whereas 50 Shades of Green says in that region there are 30,000 hectares being planted out in trees this winter, which means that the foreign interest in planting these trees is less than 10% of the planting being done. It is New Zealanders who are planting out those trees and seeing the advantages and getting some economic return out of forestry, but also doing something for the environment. There's a suggestion too that people are now being given the incentive to plant pine trees, and then they're short-lived and they all fall over because the company that has invested in them has invested in the carbon credits and not as a productive tree. Well, why would anybody sacrifice a perfectly good source of income in harvesting those trees and just take the carbon credit? So that just makes no logical sense at all.
Yeah, however, I guess that one remaining criticism of pine, with them falling over, but also just with their pine needles, I'm aware that the toxins in those are not necessarily suited to our ecosystems and not conducive to good ground growth and river quality.
Yeah, we haven't. And this is one area where, you know, I keep saying within our organisation that our science is not sufficient on this one. The accusations are levelled, but they too are not based on any particular robust science, other than that pine needles are to some degree acidic. But you go into a kauri forest, and those kauri peatlands, they're also very acidic. So you do get some acidic landscapes anyhow, and that's a natural variation.
And I was wondering if we could lastly talk about a just transition for farmers.
We've seen a massive land use change over the past 30 years, and that was towards dairying. Dairying has doubled, sheep and beef has halved, and that was economically driven. This next change, if we're going into forestry, has some certain economic component, but to accelerate that, what's happening and what the targets are, is to do it through the emissions trading scheme. And that means quite a radical disruption, especially for some regions. And the 50 Shades of Green region of the summer dry country of the east coast of the North Island is significantly one of them. And yes, there is not going to be a heck of a lot of labour after the initial planting until those forests get harvested the best part of three decades down the road. So if we're going to go on to what is the equivalent of a war footing, a national equivalent of a war footing to fight climate change on the scale that is required to achieve anything remotely effective, then the government is going to have to make sure that the transition effects are not overly borne by the people who actually live in those regions, but more shared nationally and equitably. The government clearly has a role in making the policy, but it also should pick up the pieces and make sure that the cost of the transition is as smooth as possible. And one of those ways, of course, is that if you're going to wait those best part of 30 years, that you do get some compensation return at the end of it out of the trees that are being grown. So it's a complex thing. It's not something that outside of wartime governments are used to doing, but to be remotely close to being effective, the government has to take some sort of measures to ease the transition for the farming and rural communities and those regions that are going to have the most deforestation, absolutely.
And you talked about how forestry will also create jobs. Do you think, will that be sufficient to the decrease of work that's going to be felt by these farmers?
If you develop economies locally around the forest industry of processing, and you can process trees into all sorts of different things, there will be more or at least as many jobs as continuing with farming in those regions. It's, again, part of a very much broader social issue and the very much broader issue of combating climate change. I can understand the feeling of the 50 Shades of Green people and why they're saying what they are. I mean, they've seen the long-term writing on the wall. They know what's happening to their style of life and they're fighting to preserve it. But on the other hand, you know, I know and appreciate how serious climate change is, and it's something that if we don't fight, then the consequences are going to be much greater than losing a lifestyle in some parts of New Zealand.
That was Don Carson from Forest Owners Association responding to an earlier interview I did with 50 Shades of Green.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.